Fab Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. Good Friday into a big sports weekend. Actually, this is going to be the start, I think, of just nonstop. Once the Cardinals get through the Rams this weekend, it's out of town. We do not have an ASU or U of A game, but both will find out what bowl game they are headed to this weekend. And then next Thursday, you have the Vikings here. And that game, I was talking to some people last night that they said that the playoff, if we were to put playoff tickets on sale today for the Cardinals, that it would be easier to get those than getting tickets to the Vikings, the Packers, or the Seahawks game over the holidays. That the demand for season from season ticket holders by their friends or businesses or corporations is just off the charts. And I believe it. I really do. You've got the Vikings here next week and with Adrian Peterson and all that show. And here they are in the middle of a race. And, of course, the Packers and the Seahawks, too. And I was up last night, like most of you were, and we saw the end of the game. And that's why the Lions are the Lions. That's the only way you can put it. Did you see the end of the game, Eric, last night? You watch?
I did. I saw it.
And
I actually stuck with that game. I was just about to turn it off, and I covered the Diamondbacks' new uniforms, and then I went and grabbed some food, and they had the game on where I was eating. And it was 20-7 when I got there, and I left right after the pass.
The Packers were bad. The Packers were so bad in the first half.
I didn't see any of it, but that's what I saw on Twitter. It was pretty ugly.
And so, you know, the Lions, if it's not a face mask with 600 slow-mo camera hand hitting the face mask, it's still a hand to the face mask. So if you're a Lions fan, deal with it. I think it was a bad night if you're a Seahawks fan because the Packers winning hurts the Seahawks. I don't think it impacts the Cardinals. Yeah, they're going to play the Packers later on this year, and you would like to have seen that may be the point that gets Green Bay turned around, although their receivers are just horrific. And Eddie Lacy's a load right now, a load of nothing good on the field. But, you know, the NFL, I think this will be the last calm weekend that we're going to have until probably around, the 18th of January, because there's stuff every weekend with all the bowl games, all that stuff. Mike Norvell, we're going to get into that in a minute. Jimmy Vaccaro will join us at the bottom of the hour from Vegas, as he does on Fridays. And we'll talk with the wisest wise guys in Vegas about the Cardinals-Rams game, all the bowl game implications tomorrow, the lines, the numbers, and all that. And then Goody at the Movies is going to be with us. I'm feeling like I'm not going to like the movie Bill wants to talk about today. It's Spike Lee's deal, his new movie, Chi-Raq. It's nothing personal. It's just I found with Spike Lee movies, either I really like them or I just can't stand them and want to get out of the theater. So I don't know if I want to see this. I'll be interested to hear what Bill has to say. That comes up in about 45, 50 minutes. But let's start with Mike Norvell and what happened to Arizona State last night. Does this come as a surprise? Sure, to some. I think to others, Mike Norvell leaving Arizona State is not a shock at all. That to me, when Arizona State lost at Oregon State last year, and there was the debate or argument or however you want to hear it from wherever you heard it from, the disagreement between the use of Taylor Kelly versus Mike Bercovici. From that point forward, it felt to me like it's time for Mike to move on. And I've actually told Mike this in the last year, that there's going to come a time where you need to be ready to go from a media standpoint. You need to know how to walk in and handle a press conference. I've talked to him about it. Talked to him earlier this year about it. And the last time I talked to him of any sort of substance, I didn't talk to him much during the season because they're doing their thing, was on the sidelines at Hamilton against Chandler when he was there. And I think this is a terrific move for Mike Norvell personally, professionally, for him to go to Memphis. I was talking to Eric last night. I called him about it. And your first reaction, you were dead on right about the quarterback that he has there. It's not like he's walking into an empty room and a program that doesn't have any following. Memphis has built themselves into a good spot. And if you want to be a head coach, he's still very young. That this is a smart move on his part, I think.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens with Paxton Lynch. He's the quarterback. He's a redshirt junior, so he could come out this year.
NFL radars are on him.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. I think he needs to stick around and sort of, you know, get a little bit bigger. He's kind of wiry, but... The the job that Justin Fuente did building that program from nothing. I mean, this team beat Ole Miss this year. They were possibly going to be in a New Year's Six game, and right. then they kind of fizzled down the stretch, but they're still probably going to get to 9 or 10 wins. They're in a good position. The facilities, from what I understand, at Memphis are pretty competitive. They're not horrible like they used to, and there's interest now in the football program, and it's a big difference, Brad, like we talked about last night. I mean, you're looking at a North Texas opening, and you're right. looking at a Memphis opening. That's pretty much night and, day, night and day in terms of where the programs are headed. And Norvell has enough connections in the South with Texas and Louisiana and some of the places that he's recruited that it won't be hard to pull kids to Memphis because it's really not that far.
Well, that this hiring is being hailed in Memphis. And here, I was at a place last night with some big cigars that were very happy that he's leaving. And that's just how it's gone now with the ASU faithful. They are no longer in the malaise that was there at the end of the Dennis Erickson era, or the Dirk Cutter era. There actually is a bit of passion. And so they wanted somebody to take the fall for this year. And it's not Mike taking the fall. Mike is doing the very smart thing. His agent, Jimmy Sexton, did the very smart thing by getting him out of here. And we'll get him out on his own. Now, the questions following, this is a blow to ASU today. There's no question about it. You lost the deputy. The deputy moved on. So you don't pay the deputy all that money, and you don't give him the big title and all that comes with it. And if you try to acknowledge that, try to smooth this out and say, well, this isn't a blow, then you're just fooling yourselves.
And he was wise, Brad, because when Norvell and Graham arrived, they had no quarterback. And Norvell crafted Taylor Kelly into a very good college quarterback. Mm-hmm. And then when Kelly was gone, they had groomed Mike Bercovici via injury or what have you, whatever the circumstance was, to slide right in. But now, with Berko graduating, no more eligibility, there's a big question mark next year. I mean, everyone says, oh, Brady White's going to be really good. Well, he redshirted this year. Bryce Perkins, he was such a hotshot player at Chandler. Well, he hasn't played a down in college yet. Manny Wilkins, small sample size, not really sure how he's going to be when he's not just put into specialty packages, when he is the guy, if he is the guy. If I'm Mike Norvell, it's like, I think it's time to go. And he jumped, and he jumped at the right time.
Well, he'd been with Todd for 8 years. That's an awfully long time in the coaching business to tie your wagon to somebody, to mentor you, and to grow you. And
this speaks highly of Todd Graham, too, by the way.
He's not trashing him.
No, but Todd Graham basically shaped Norvell into a college-ready head coach, and now a pretty decent program wanted him, and he jumped.
So. Well, last year he could have gone to Colorado State?
Colorado State. Again, not a bad job, but I'd rather be at Memphis.
Well, look what Jim McElwain did, though,
correct.
At Colorado State.
Correct.
What did he turn that into? I mean, what this job is for him is a stepping stone job. Mike Norvell's not going to be the head coach at Memphis, in all likelihood, for, I don't know, 8 years, 10 years. This is one of those deals where you go to Memphis, you're there 3, 4, 5 years max, and you do a very good job, and maybe even less than that, and then an SEC school comes after you, an ACC school comes after you, or a Big 12 school comes after you, or, you know, Mike had his time out here, and who knows what he thinks of the West Coast. But he's got a young family. This is a terrific spot for him. He'll be introduced later today. When Todd said that Mike Norvell is the best assistant coach he's ever worked with, he has said that. So the best assistant coach he's ever worked with finally has come up with an opportunity. Now, the trickle-down effect for that is, will Chip Long leave and be his offensive coordinator? Because that was all over Memphis last night, and some people that I talked to. I talked to two assistant coaches in the Pac-12 last night. They said they wouldn't be surprised to see Chip Long go, that Chip's very close to Mike.
And he is the recruiting coordinator, is
he? He handles recruiting, okay. Yeah.
So, just for the people that aren't familiar with that name, they should be. He's very important.
Yeah. So, and this comes at a time where immediately you go to the offensive recruits, even though I think Chase Lucas is going to play corner for them at ASU, and he had to reaffirm his commitment.
As did N'Keal Harry.
As did N'Keal Harry, the two big recruits for ASU. So if you're an Arizona State Sun Devil fan, this is part of the deal. Okay, the last few years you've had great success. This was a disappointing season without question. And so Mike feels like this is the best spot for him to go to. He decides to go to Memphis rather than some of the previous jobs. I think you mentioned to me last night about North Texas or some of the other positions that may have come open if he waited. This seems to me to be an ideal landing spot. Now, what will the trickle-down effect be at Arizona State? Because if you think, and I don't know what restrictions have been put on Mike Norvell, you can take the job, you can't take any of the assistant coaches with you. I don't know if players would want to leave the program to go be with Mike Norvell. These are all questions that fans have sent to me. If I am one of these quarterbacks on the roster, and one, meaning of the three, of Wilkins and White and Perkins, and I have that close of a relationship, and if I see that I'm not going to be the guy here at Arizona State, and I could go be somebody that sits out this year behind a guy that's going to be NFL ready, and NFL is going to look at me, and I could follow that guy. If I'm Taylor Kelly and I aspire to be an assistant coach or a coordinator at some point down the road, if that's what I want to be into, do I tie my wagon and stay here with Todd Graham, or do I tie myself to Mike Norvell and go be with him? These are all very fair questions. And so with that, there's going to be some trickle down and there's going to be some fallout. And they may lose, you know, Chris Ball's name is a finalist for Montana State. So, and I'd heard of a couple of other coaches that are looking to move on as well. So there may be an exodus, just not Mike alone that leaves Arizona State today. And this will be, it'll be a clean slate for the new coordinator. It'll be a clean slate. And I'm sure that within the program, there's going to be people lobbying for it. Now let's move over to Rich Rod. So ASU loses their coordinator. U of A, and we're not surprised that Rich's name is there. Rich is not interviewed, from my understanding, yet. Rich did meet with the team yesterday in Tucson. He was in Tucson. And he did meet with the team, and he did talk about the rumors of him interviewing at other places. If I'm South Carolina and I look at Will Muschamp, and I'm not down there, but just in the coaching circles, so Will Muschamp would have a distinct advantage because he's already boots on the ground down there. But if I've seen Will Muschamp being interviewed, Rich Rod beats him out hands down. If Rich Rod gets in front of the people at South Carolina and you've got to make a decision of who's going to lead your program, who's going to bring enthusiasm, who's going to bring energy, he's young still. I don't think there's any question you go with Rich Rodriguez.
Especially Will Muschamp's experiment at Florida. Never worked.
Didn't work.
Tough position if you're going to try to sell that to your alumni and big boosters. We're going to go get Will Muschamp, who is a phenomenal coordinator, but maybe not quite ready to be a head coach again.
Okay, so I'm still of the opinion that Rich Rod is leaving. I have been of that opinion. I haven't wavered on that opinion. There are times where I've acknowledged that, yeah, I was told Georgia was going to be open, and it was open, and there was no way he could compete on that hire down there. No way. But he can compete on this hire. And with Mark Richt taking the Miami of Florida job, this to me seems, and Missouri got filled last night, of the open positions today, because I still think you're going to see Jim Moore get pushed by the NFL. I think you're going to see David Shaw get pushed by the NFL. And I think you're going to see Brian Kelly get pushed by the NFL. I still believe there's going to be this second major wave of big name college coaches that are going to get chased and going to be pursued. And when those jobs come open, you could sit to the side and say, well, maybe I should wait and see what happens here because this could be a better position. Now, I was told last night, Rich wants to get back to the East Coast, that the West is not as preferred to him. I don't know that. He hasn't said that to me. That's in the coaching circles from a couple of assistants. So the college scene this weekend, and then we have all the bowl games being filled and being announced. What was I saw today? The Fiesta Bowl is Battle Frog. They're going to be the Battle Frog Fiesta Bowl. So we'll get into that.
Frog and the Motel 6.
Yeah.
Those are your local.
There you
sponsors.
Go. On the other side, Eric was at the Diamondbacks last night. We'll have that next. I'm Brad Sussmat. It's a great time of year. It's the silly season of coaching. It is the time of year where the winter baseball meetings start this coming week. The Diamondbacks already tried to put $120 million in front of Johnny Cueto, and he said that's not enough. Are they going to do something major at the meetings next week? But beyond that, Eric went last night. The assignment was this. And all I saw a press release, the Diamondbacks releasing their uniforms. And for some reason, through the years, guys, whenever we do stories on new uniforms, y'all want to see what they look like. It's fine. It's fashion. So Eric goes down there last night. Take me through this.
Eight new uniform combinations.
Eight.
Mixing the present with the past. We're going to keep the Sedona red and the Sonoran sand, but we'll still give you the teal and blue or whatever that other color is they started with.
Eight.
And I mean...
That's awful.
What a coincidence. That
looks like
these.
The Padres. They look like the Padres or U of A.
They released these 3 weeks before Christmas, which is just a coincidence.
That looks like a U of A uniform.
It does.
Am I right?
You know what? I thought the exact same thing.
All right. Now, I like that.
Yep. Cole Mentor was great.
I'll take that.
So funny. He does a little twist here.
Yeah, that's
Everyone's
good.
Everyone's going crazy.
Doesn't break
those,
his ankle.
Those are the originals that they won a World Series in.
Yep.
I like those.
Okay, I'm okay with this one.
I like that they brought the number back on the front of the jersey. I do like that.
I like the black. I think I'm okay with that one. I'll take that one.
Yeah, this is the end of the video.
All right.
I could have made it like 5 minutes, but I decided to cut it short. So.
So the first one where they wear those grays. Now, did they give out like when they're going to wear these? Is there certain dates or?
They're going to start wearing them in spring training. And I asked Chip Hale because basically they had a runway set up, as you saw if you're watching us on the stream. And the media was in the back,
yeah.
And we were up on risers, and we had to shoot down.
Right.
And afterwards, they kind of broke off into one-on-ones, and I asked Chip Hale, I said, so are you going to get into some sort of pattern? Are you a superstitious manager in terms of if you wear the blacks and you win four in a row, are we going to see the blacks for the next week? And he said, you know, well, we'll see. We're going to leave it maybe up to the players. Maybe we'll put it out there on Twitter a couple days before the get. Exactly.
God.
Maybe we'll see what the fans want us to wear.
Oh.
And my timeline last night on Twitter, Brad, blew up with people saying, if the Diamondbacks only spent as much time trying to get out of third and fourth place in the NL West as to putting over 2 years' worth of work into creating these new uniforms, which were created in-house. Derek Hall mentioned that a few times last night during the seminar. But the Diamondbacks did put on a good show, and I'm fine with it. It's okay. It's just it's hard because
they haven't won.
Well, when college football teams put out new uniforms, there's just a huge buzz.
Yeah.
When a baseball team releases a new uniform, it's like a quick spike, and then like the Army or Navy. I think it's the Navy helmets they're going to be wearing this weekend. That thing has been on my Twitter timeline for 3 or 4 days. People are like, wow, these things are so cool. I would guess by the end of today, maybe tomorrow, I don't think people are really going to be talking about these D-backs uniforms.
Well, but here's the thing. You have to put people in the uniform. Like, I get Derek's approach.
They want the younger look.
Sure they do. Sure they do. And it's like you said, so all this new gear is out. It's just in time for the holidays. It's fine. That's easy business. That's business 101. But I think that them pursuing Cueto, and if Cueto were in one of those uniforms, wow, okay. And not that Johnny Cueto, if it was David Price in one of those uniforms, you know it would be knockout city.
Yep.
The Yankees don't have to do this. The Red Sox don't have to do this. The Dodgers don't really have to do this. The Giants don't have to do this.
Padres do, and they did.
The Padres did.
New uniforms for San Diego.
Right.
Those are pretty cool, by the way.
But it's not being critical of them. It's just when you're in a medium to small size market, unless you go do what the Kansas City Royals have done, which is win a World Series, you've got to find ways to bring in more revenue. Now, the new television dollars are so crazy and obscene and asinine. Maybe my argument flies in the face nowadays. Maybe it's an old school argument. I am one of those that always believes that I don't care what the uniforms look like. I don't care. I've seen a lot of really good-looking uniforms with guys wearing them that couldn't play dead in teams that finished in fourth and fifth place. And I don't like it when teams finish in fourth or fifth place over and over and over and over. Do I think they're heading in the right direction? Absolutely.
I don't think they're that far away.
I don't think
they really are. I really don't. A couple key pieces, a top-of-the-rotation guy, like you said, Cueto or whoever, they're not – Chip Hale knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
He had a one-year game plan that's going to go into year two, that's going to go into year three.
Dave Stewart, I think, has been more than competent.
I agree.
Tony's been here. Ken has gone underground. And so it's just a different feel, a different environment. They had to do something different because they weren't winning. They assembled a team that was old, slow, not good fundamentally. They missed on draft picks. They made decisions on draft picks. Trevor Bauer, you know, they made moves that you were just like, if you look at the last 3-4 years, it's what a train wreck this has been. But I would say that in the last 13 months, 14 months, they've done things the right way and things that needed to happen.
And you see, Brad, when this team is relevant, people care.
Sure.
Not even good, just relevant. Just stay in the race until football season
they
starts.
They were still getting good TV rating numbers in September.
Uh-huh.
I saw the numbers. They were still getting, people still care the third week in September. And so if you add two or three pieces to an organization that the division, well, we should find out about Zach Greinke today. Today is supposed to be the day on Greinke. If he's going to go to the Dodgers or if he's going to go to the Giants, but regardless, he's going to stay in the NL West. And the Dodgers have a new manager that I think is going to do really well. Dave Roberts is a really good guy, first and foremost. So the Diamondbacks have to figure out, still on the field, how to put a product out there, because the buzz will eventually fade off of, are they going to wear the grays today? It's kind of like, honey, is the roof going to be open tonight or not? Are you kidding me? Well, I'm going to call the roof hotline. Well, they're 30 games out of first, but if the roof's not going to be open, then we're not going. You know, there's things in professional sports nowadays that, and even on the college level, that you look at and say, we would have never talked about uniform stuff. And I don't even buy that it's a millennial thing. You know, my kids are in their early 20s. They're college and just outside of college. They don't care. They just want to go to the game and have a good time.
Last year it was the Diamond Dog and the Churro Dog this time of year, and this year it's going to be the new uniforms.
But you've got to do something. They're close, but they've got to push it over the line. They haven't been able to do that yet. Jimmy Vaccaro is going to join us in a couple of minutes. We'll talk to Jimmy about all the games on the college front tomorrow, and then also the Cardinals game on Sunday. The View from Vegas with Jimmy Vaccaro. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmann. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. And we're going to have Jimmy here in a couple minutes. And with all the games that are going on this weekend, I don't see where we're going to have mass chaos as much as I would like to have mass chaos tomorrow. Because the Fiesta Bowl, they're sitting out this year. I mean, they're one of the big bowl games as usual, but they do not have either one of the semifinals. So we're not going to have a matchup. In all likelihood, there's an outside shot of Notre Dame, Ohio State at the Fiesta Bowl. There's an outside shot of that. But we're going to probably see a team like Houston come here and play in the bowl game this year. So I would love chaos tomorrow, but I don't think we're going to get chaos. Jimmy Vaccaro joins us from Vegas for a couple of minutes, as always. And Jimmy, so in Vegas today, which of the games tomorrow of the conference championship games, is it all Big Ten, all Iowa, Michigan State where the buzz is, or are these other conference final games? Is there some interest in Vegas for them?
Well, first of all, there's no chaos, right? You didn't watch last night's game then, did you, Brad?
Zero.
Chaos is good for bookmakers, because when it's insane, it is insane. Remember last night, if you had Detroit under, you went from a winner to a loser. If you had the Packers and over, you went from a loser to a winner there. It was absolutely incredible the amount of money that switched hands with 6 seconds ago. But that's the way it's been going. But as far as the championship games tomorrow, it's the Big Four that are taking all the attention. USC, Stanford, a lot of money on USC early on, but Stanford money lately. Naturally, the one that's going to close north of 19 is Florida, Alabama. Can't get anybody to bet on Florida. Open the game 17. We're at 18.5, and that's about what the number is around town. And then naturally, you go to 5 o'clock, maybe the most intriguing game. There's a lot of what you would consider smart guys on North Carolina plus the 6 over Clemson. Mm. The game went as low as 4.5 yesterday, but there's been some, as we say, buyback on Clemson. The game's back up to 5. Very, very intriguing game. A one-way attack, about 65% of the tickets, is on Michigan State over Iowa. So we opened the game 2.5. We're up to 3.5, and I probably think that game will go to 4. So those four games were drawing the other attention. Southern Miss, Western Kentucky, nice stories. Temple Houston, nice stories, but will not draw near the attention that the four that I just talked about.
4.5, North Carolina at one point yesterday. What's that all about, Jimmy?
Well, first of all, I mean, North Carolina, they actually gave the first game of the season away on two drop passes, and actually Clemson is still ranked number one. But there's a lot of people thinking that Carolina, if they win the game, should be in the Final Four. That's a little bit of a stretch because they'll have to climb over the marquee teams such as Ohio State. But I can surely see the first move on North Carolina plus the 6 points. It's a very, very good football team.
Iowa, Michigan State, on that one, it's there's no respect nationally for Iowa. They've played the no respect card to the nth degree, and I think rightly so this year in the Big Ten.
So you're exactly right on the money. There's probably a lot of people don't even know that they're in the Big Ten championship game because their name has been mentioned. The only way it's been mentioned, naturally, they've had a great season with the undefeated with a zero on their right-hand side. But as far as, like, public perception, as far as, like, what I call marquee value, there is none. Now, Michigan State's a completely different story only because, you know, even way back in August, Brad, you talked about Ohio State running through that conference, but Michigan State was always the team who had a chance to beat Ohio State. You know, Iowa, no one even brought their name up. But trust me, Michigan State better be ready for Iowa, you know, tomorrow afternoon.
All right, over on the NFL side, where would you say the Cardinals are in Super Bowl interest from fans? I mean, when you're looking at the numbers and everything, is it Cardinals right behind New England, or do you see others?
No, there's still that perception you're the Arizona Cardinals. Now, there's a lot of attention on it, and I say that in a nice way, not in a negative fashion. There's been more money this year bet on Arizona to win the season win totals, to win the division, conference, and naturally the Super Bowl. But it hasn't been a landslide, only because it's still Arizona, and Seattle seems to be coming up to life. So there was more money a few weeks ago when Seattle was facing like what you almost called an elimination game. So we did pick up some money there, but it's still a nice win for us if they would get there. Right now, most people who do numbers, and I guess you can throw me in there also, I have them about the fifth rated power rating team. That doesn't mean that they can go out and, you know, and beat everybody handily. But, you know, what you saw last week is exactly what you thought you would see. Going through the game, knowing that, you know, they really weren't in a position to lose the game, but they went through the motions and they did just enough. And it might be the same thing this week, and they're traveling to the Rams, and the Rams are just done, and I think Jeff Fisher is gone also. Your six-point road favorite, there'll be a little money with the parlays on Arizona. Might be some straight money on the Rams, but I think you go through this game and win another lackluster game. But to answer your question, fourth or fifth is about where everybody has them right now as far as like winning the Super Bowl.
See, and I think in the next, and that's about right. I think in the next month, they have the Vikings here next Thursday night. They still have Green Bay and Seattle here to close out the season. They have a road game at Philly in between. But I think a month from now, you and I may have a different conversation the first week of January because this really is a prove it, put up or shut up time for them.
Yeah, you're right. And you know what else it is as far as from the bookmaking side of it? I love all these divisions. I like the Patriots losing. Now there's more interest on that side of the coast. When you get to week 15 and 16 in my area, you like to see every game still mean something going the whole way. So in other words, you're not guessing they're going to rest this guy because they won the division. You're not guessing, you know, who's going to play how much time. These teams will be playing all 16 games because, as you can see and as you just stated, hell, there's just so many teams that just aren't out of it yet. So that's what makes it good for the bookmaker coming down the stretch here.
What was it like last night? Were you around on that final play?
Well, it's insane. You still have people, I think, staring at their tickets if it said Detroit and under on it. And actually, you used to have some jubilations. This is National Finals Rodeo Week, so the place is packed with Cowboys. But I think the people at Packers and the Overs joined with the Cowboys are drinking Crown Royal by 10 o'clock last night, and they're probably still drinking it. It was pretty insane.
See you, Jimmy. Thanks.
All right, pal.
There's Jimmy Vaccaro from Vegas. That's great. That's great. Did you put a ticket? I'm going to Vegas this weekend, Eric. I'm I'm running up there to do some stuff. Are you...
Do some stuff. I like how you put that. Yeah, you can do a lot of stuff in Vegas, so we'll just leave
that open-ended. Well, I'm gonna do some stuff.
Yep. Good answer.
Did you put anything down on your frogs before the season? Did you do anything?
Nope.
Nothing?
No.
You want me to do something for you while I'm up there?
No.
All right.
I don't bet on my own team. Although I did make a couple bets here at Skyview with people, and I won them because I know my team better than they do. So.
We have Goody at the Movies coming up, and I want to circle back on if you're one of these, if you're Chip Long, or let's say you're on Rich Rod's staff, and you hear that Rich Rod may go to South Carolina, or that Mike Norvell has left and you have a chance to leave, what's the better move for you if you're on a staff? Are you better off to stay where you are with Todd Graham or whomever you hope keeps you in Tucson, or to go to Columbia, South Carolina, or go to Memphis? We'll talk about that too on the other side. We'll have Bill Goodykuntz. He talked to Spike Lee, so he's got the review of Chirac and much more as we continue on. Stay with us. Now, because you know what's going on in the world of sports on a Friday to get you out to the weekend, it is Goody at the Movies, Bill Goodykuntz, chief film critic for AZ Central and Gannett, media critic. And last time that we chatted, you had mentioned that you had talked with Spike Lee, and he has this movie coming out that has Samuel L. Jackson and Wesley Snipes and Dave Chappelle. It looks amazing and interesting, but Bill, I've always thought that Spike Lee movies either hit or miss wildly. Where does this one come down for you, Chirac?
Kind of right down the middle. It does both, but I liked it a lot. I think what I've said in my review is that an angry Spike Lee is an interesting Spike Lee, and he's really interesting in this one. That it's a film about, it's an update of a Greek play, an Aristophanes play, about the Peloponnesian Wars, where the women of Sparta, I think it was, they decided they'd band together and have a sex strike to try to get the guys to end the war. And that's what the women in Chicago do here. He brings it to present-day Chicago. But he does all this really powerful stuff. Like at the beginning, there's Nick Cannon, who's one of the stars of the movie. He has a song, and they show the numbers of people who have been killed by gun violence in Iraq and Afghanistan since the wars there started. And they compare it to the gun violence in Chicago, and it's worse in Chicago. It's really striking stuff. Some of it is silly. Some of it is, some of it doesn't work. Some of it is song and dance stuff, and some of it is really moving and, make you choked up. But the main thing that he wants to do and what he's really good at is make you angry.
Well, and that's what I'm thinking. This movie sounds like it's going to make me very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think it will. And not always for the reasons that he wants you to.
Mm.
I mean, sometimes there are a couple of things where you just sort of cringe, where it's not as, I don't think it works. He doesn't quite get out what he wants out of it. There's one scene where the women take over this National Guard armory, and there's this this really like stereotypical racist army guy. He wears like Confederate flag underwear and stuff. I mean, that stuff is kind of silly. But overall, and I don't want to say anything about the ending, but there's a scene at the end that brings it back to real life. That is that's really moving. And just really kind of brings it back. I mean, I really like that part.
So
is that
yes,
vague enough to tell you how?
I get where you're coming on that. So is this one that you are saying you better go see, should see, or boy, you may walk out on this one?
Yeah, I don't think you'll walk out. I think you should see it, and I think that if you turn on the TV or the radio or anywhere else, any time today. It's certainly in light of the events of this week, these are things that people need to be talking about, and these are things that people need to be mad about. And the thing that I like about this movie, even if it's not 100% successful, is at least he's out there swinging. He's trying to do something. And he could take many different routes. He takes a confrontational one. And I like that. I mean, good movie, bad movie. I think it's a movie that people ought to see.
I know I don't want to get into the Christmas movies yet. I will next week want to talk to you about Concussion. I'm getting a lot of people, though, sending me notes about Camel View closing. So what's going on there, Bill?
It's closing, and I'm sorry. I hate it. It's closing on the 10th, and they are opening a kind of a luxury thing across the street at Scottsdale Fashion Square. But they have said that they will dedicate at least as many screens, if not more, to independent film and small film, like they have at Scottsdale. But the thing that I liked about Camelview was it was one little link to a place like Berkeley or somewhere where we had a funky little art house, you know? And everything in Phoenix gets torn down after 20 years and gets built back up in
right.
whatever hideous architectural style is popular now to replace the hideous architectural style of 20 years ago. And Camelview is weird looking, but I like that. And it's old. It looks like a movie theater. It doesn't look like somebody's leather appointed upholstery couch that you're supposed to sit in. How am I supposed to concentrate on a grizzly bear attacking Leonardo DiCaprio if the guy next to me is ordering a hamburger and a beer, you know?
I got you on that. Our independent films, you mentioned there's still going to be screened there. Do you think that this is a blow to the independent movement?
I hope not. I hope it's a good thing. It's that they can show more. As an audience member, I think that's great. I hope they'll show even more independent films, even more small films. As a movie critic, it kind of makes me want to go cry in the corner to think that there might be even more movies to review every week. But, you know, that's like having two good quarterbacks. You know, that's a good problem to have.
I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time as always. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bill Goodykoontz, Goody at the Movies. Appreciate his time as always. All right, we got a few minutes here. So there's this this narrative about Oklahoma. Oklahoma is sitting out this weekend while in the playoff, everybody else is going out there this weekend, and that putting your bodies and your teams at risk is unfair with the playoff. It's like a bye week. So where are you at on this one, Eric? Do you see the point?
I'm not a huge fan of it, but it is what it is.
Is it unfair to everyone else? I think it is. I think it is. You can say, well, the semifinals aren't until December 31st, so everybody else gets. But look, if you lose somebody this weekend while Oklahoma just sits on the side and rests everybody up and they don't lose anybody, then, yeah, it was unfair.
Well, cool. And, I mean, look at Clemson, Brad. They run the table. I mean, technically, if like you said, if there was no championship game, they would be the number one seed.
They wouldn't have any worries.
They wouldn't have any worries.
Yep.
And they should beat North Carolina. But, like Vaccaro said, you know, North Carolina's a team that is kind of, I mean, they lost to Florida to South Carolina, and they've just kind of just been coasting, and here they are. And if I'm Dabo Sweeney, I'd be not sleeping really well tonight, knowing that their perfect body of work could all be down the drain by this time Sunday morning.
If you're an assistant coach at U of A and Rich Rod goes to South Carolina and he comes to you and says, you need to come with me to Columbia and you're going to make more money than you are at U of A, do you do it?
Call the realtor.
If you are at the staff of U of A and you follow Rich Rod wherever,
call the realtor.
If you're at Todd Graham's facility, you're at Arizona State, and Mike Norvell calls you, unless there's been restrictions put on him. Should Mike Norvell coach in the bowl game?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do we have a ruling
on that?
We don't have a ruling
on that one yet. I'm of the opinion that he should not.
I agree. This is a big recruiting time.
Yeah, it's more important for him to go recruit than for him to be here two or three more weeks.
And I would think Graham would be okay with him not coaching. I mean, those two have – it hasn't always been perfect, but clearly there's great respect between those two. And I would hope Todd would say, you know what, you need to go. You need to go. So.
Well, and Todd may say, you just need to go and don't let the door hit you if you're going.
Maybe.
I don't know if that
you would
relationship...
know better than I would. I'm sure you've been talking to people and you know what's happening in there.
Well,
I don't know.
I don't think that relationship is 100% great. Maybe it was never 100% great. Wasn't bad, but I just think that, look, we were there at Missouri when he threw Mike under the bus the very first year.
And I remember, Brad, seeing Mike Norvell walk out of the football offices after the USC game this year. And that guy, and that was like when everything was crashing.
Piling. Yeah.
And he looked just horrible. Like he either got chewed out or somebody said something to him. And that's how it is. I mean, it's a high-stakes, high-pressure job.
Yeah, he gets paid all that money.
That's it.
He's the deputy.
He is.
Deputy commissioner.
Not very many assistant coaches west of the Mississippi make $1 million a year.
And are known as the deputy.
The deputy.
So if I'm an assistant coach on Todd Graham's staff, And if Mike Norvell says, do you want to come with me to Memphis?
Depends on who it is.
And where they're at in their career.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that.
Like Jackie Shipp, I don't think Jackie Shipp needs to leave. He is an
Jackie Shipp needs to be taken care of more financially,
correct.
In my opinion.
He is part of Graham. He is kind of Graham's right-hand man. He needs to stay.
So I had people sending me notes about guys like Norm Chow. Norm Chow is a man who was a terrific coach at BYU, but as a head coach, he wasn't good, and I think his personality and Todd's would just clash all over the place. That was the main name I was getting last night.
It'd be interesting, but I can't see the dynamics with Norm Chow and Todd Graham.
No, I can't see it.
Because Norm Chow's stubborn. Todd Graham's really stubborn.
And then, you know, a guy like Major Applewhite, I think Doug had that. I think Howler had that name, too. That
it's
was
not
all
a bad
over,
name.
It was all over the internet last night.
Sort of like we talked about. There's going to be another Mike Norvell. That's just, there's so many jobs
but
is
Taylor Kelly in a position to just go to a position? He's not going to be a coordinator. I'm not suggesting that. But, you know, Mike Norvell started in his 20s as an assistant coach.
Yep.
And he's what, 33, 34?
34.
He's 34. And he's now a head coach.
It's good for him.
So, but the thought that, well, you got to pay your dues and you got to do, no, you don't. No, I'm not dismissing, you know, on the pro side, having Bruce Arians and Tom Moore here is great. I admire them. But if you see somebody who knows what's going on inside and out, and Todd, obviously, if they'd been together for 8 years, he's 34, so Todd gave him the job when he was 24, right? Todd had him staff at 24, so what's the difference with Taylor Kelly? Sports360AZ.com, we partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Plenty of content, including Eric's fashion show from last night with the Diamondbacks. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Are the Diamondbacks going to win more games this year than last year because of what they're wearing? The answer is no.
Everybody's got
care.
An opinion, though, Bad. Everybody wants to talk about those uniforms. Good, bad, indifferent. Well, maybe not indifferent, but
give
everyone
me some
has
guys
an
with a pulse that can play. That's it. Pulse, play. Have a great weekend.